Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure and honor for us to be here in Edmonton. I asked beforehand, before we come to a community, we always want to know what the community is a little bit about. I asked people, what is Edmonton about? So they said, Rabbi Stone, Edmonton is a spiritual community. You know, I was driving over here to the show and I saw a sign, Unity of Edmonton, a spiritual community. I was not sure exactly whether that was the address that we were supposed to be speaking about at today. Baruch Hashem, we are at instead Beth Israel. Rabbi Bendelstein spoke about the hunt of the Chashmonaim for the oil. I'm going to speak about something a little more practical. I am going to speak about the hunt for kosher buffalo wing sauce. Which, for most of us, is just as, if not more important at this point, than the search for the kosher oil. The topic that I'm supposed to address right now is ingredients, ingredient panels, reading ingredient panels, and sometimes we call this, why can't I just read the label? There are any number of ways to address this. Oftentimes, the way that we approach this is speak at places where it's in the context of a dinner or some type of meal, and I oftentimes will just ask people, whatever is on your table right now, just bring it up and we'll look at it and see whether we're actually going to eat it or not, depending on what it says. Ingredients, in and of themselves, it's a little bit of a misnomer. The idea of talking about reading ingredient panels. What we're really going to discuss is why exactly, whether I can assume something is kosher or whether it's not kosher. When I go into the supermarket and I look at an item on the shelf, so am I allowed to think, what am I supposed to think when I see it? Am I supposed to think not kosher until proven yes? Or do I think kosher until proven not? The truth is, I don't really know the answer to that question. I do know that if I would ever try and bring anything into my home and show it to my wife and it didn't have a good hashgacha on it, it is everything in my house is not kosher until proven kosher. But whether that's the approach we're supposed to have or not is a very fair question. It's a very fair question. One thing I can tell you is to relate to you just Rabbi Bendelstein really dealt with the Devar Torah part of this presentation. I'm going to talk more about the practicality and the food side of it. But one thing I can share with you is, why in the world are we allowed to rely on kosher symbols anyway? So there are those that think that there's a halacha, there's a rule in halacha in Jewish law about eid echad ne'eman b'isur, that if one person testifies, if an individual testifies that something is kosher, so then we're allowed to rely upon them. Obviously, if they are a kosher observant person, if a person really doesn't care about kosher, is not kosher observant, if they tell you it's kosher, you can't really rely on them, because at the end of the day, it doesn't really make a difference to them or not. So many people think that the backbone of kosher certification is, when I see this symbol, that there is somebody who is testifying that this object or this product is kosher. Just for the scholarly in the audience, that really does not work, because as Rabbi Bendelstein has pointed out, there are incidents where people will print that OU symbol, or will print that kosher symbol on items that aren't kosher. For example, as he mentioned, we have our Cracker Jack, which by the way is OU, our Cracker Jack legal team. They're not funded by Cracker Jack, they're just really good at what they do. Our unauthorized OU usage team in the office, who have a collection. They have their souvenirs of different cases that they've come across. They have kosher octopus. They have a bottle jar of octopus with little octopuses and octopi in it. Although pie is more bakery, Rabbi Bendelstein, that would be more up your alley. They have octopi in a bottle, which are clearly not kosher, with a big OU on them. We have found pig actually with no you on it. There are any number of examples of these things. Obviously, all of them are unauthorized and illegal, but if a company puts that symbol on their label, there's no one testifying that that product is kosher. So to say that the OU is a type of testimony, an eid echad, is really does not work in practice. What the OU or any kosher, reliable kosher symbol is what we call in halacha, in Jewish law, we call the siman. We call it something that you can look at. It's a way to recognize something which is kosher. We know that when it comes to animals. So how do we know a kosher animal? Well, there are a number of ways to establish it. One is you could go over to the animal and ask him, are you kosher? Most of the time this doesn't work. One should be very careful, by the way, if they want to try that. Some animals are very dangerous, and of course it's a big mitzvah in the Torah to protect your health and not do dangerous things. But you could ask the animal if he's kosher. The other way to do it is if you'll make an examination of his hooves and find that the hooves are split hooves, and you'll do another examination and find out that he chooses cud. So an animal with split hooves chooses a cud is a kosher animal. Now, that doesn't make it kosher. The fact that it has split hooves and chooses its cud is not what makes the animal kosher. It's kosher because it's a kosher animal. The way that we are able to tell, the identifying thing about it is when we see these two factors, we see these two aspects of the animal, that's how we know that something is kosher. The same way is true with a kosher symbol. When we see a kosher symbol on a product, we see it on something, that is our way of identifying that what's in that box is kosher. Sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes we see a sign, a symbol, and it's incorrect. That does happen. But the reason that we're relying on it is because when you see that kosher symbol, that's a recognizable trait of a kosher product. The only reason it is that way is because everything is backed up by all sorts of legalities of trademark infringement and all sorts of things like that. And therefore, when Rabbi Bendelstein says, never assume, always look for that symbol, it's most important to look for the symbol because once someone puts this symbol onto a package, then they have entered into a world of legal action that unless they are correct, they don't want to get anywhere near it. They don't want to get anywhere near it, and that's why there is validity to, that's why we can rely on that symbol when we see it. But let's talk about ingredients. Talk about ingredients. Why do we need kosher? Why do we need kosher supervision? Why do we need all those rabbis poking around in all of those factories and raising the cost? If you look at some of the virulently anti-Semitic neo-Nazi websites, white supremacist websites, they'll talk about the kosher tax, right? And they will tell you that the amount of money which is added to the price or to the cost of any given food is exorbitant. Let me assure you that the amount of money that it costs a company, even a large company such as, throw out a name, Coca-Cola, Mars, Nestle, whoever it might be, give me a bakery name, Entenmann's, make you happy, I'll give you a bakery. Right? Any of them, the amount of money that what they pay a kosher certifying agency for the actual certification is so minimal that it probably adds maybe 0.00000010 cent. And that's US, which is worth much less, by the way, than Canadian at this moment, a fact that we're not very happy about. But you should enjoy it while you have it. But it probably adds something. I mean, it's such a minimal amount. You would be shocked that actually we would do kosher certification for such a small amount. We charge companies only really what reflects for our costs, and then to pay Rabbi Bendelstein's very exorbitant salary. But aside from that, it really is an inexpensive proposition for a company. It is much more costly for a company to change the way that they do business and for the change the way that they produce, and then to maybe perhaps stop buying from one certain supplier and buy from a different one because this one is kosher, that one is not, that's where the extra costs really come. If you look on these websites, though, they will accuse us of charging all sorts of money and taxes, which is clearly just anti-Semitic. But one might say, what exactly, comma, what could be exactly wrong? Let's take a good example. This is a good example because I've used it before and it works. So let's take a very good example. We go into the store. We walk over to the shelf and we see we're looking for cranberry juice. Cranberry juice, my wife tells me, is a very, very healthy thing. She tells me it's more healthy than carbonated caffeine beverages. If it works for you, it works for you. But she tells me that cranberry juice, that's where it's at. So now I walk into the store. What do we have? Safeways over here? We got Sobe. What do we have over here? So, okay, this is not, we're just using the name as an example. This is not to accuse, impugn, integrity, do anything of any particular brand, company, organization, producer, source, manufacturer. We walk in there and we go to the juice section and we find cranberry juice. How many cranberry juices do we have? About 700. Right? Because cranberry juice is in. Cranberry juice is hot. It's actually cold, lukewarm. But nowadays, cranberry juice is a hot item. So now we look at the cranberry juices. We have, let's say, 9 of them with that good OU, or we're in Canada, the COR, BCK, MK, whatever it might be, or the EK symbol, perhaps. Who knows? Maybe one day. But we have a number of those. And then we have today's sale cranberry juice. No name, yellow label, no brand, nothing. All it says is cranberry juice, 100% juice. And you look at it, and it is perhaps maybe because it's on, you have little cards here where you get discounts, you know, like we have Price Plus cards where I live. But something, a store card, if you buy it that week, then you get, you know, 4,000 for a dollar or something like that. You get points and miles and air miles. When I lived in Canada, air miles. But you buy it, so you're going to buy. So you say to yourself, listen, what in the world could be wrong with this, right? It's cranberry juice. Anybody see a non-kosher cranberry? Good. I have never seen one either. Right? Every cranberry that I have met so far, and I have met millions of cranberries, honestly, face to face, up close, personal, mano a cranberry, and all of them have been 100% kosher. So nothing wrong with this. So it's cranberry juice, 100% juice. What in the world? So why shouldn't I save a little money? Tell you what, I will buy the cheaper one without the hashgacha, and I'll give half of the difference to the outreach program in Edmonton. Alright? So what could the other half I'll pocket? But what could be better than that? I save some money, the outreach people, we support the Jewish community effort, and everyone should be happy. What in the world could be wrong with that? Because what is it? It's 100% cranberry juice, right? Wrong. That's because Rabbi Stone knows how to read, and all the people that said right don't know how to read. Because the same way, no person on their label, no company on their label is going to make a claim that is going to be factually incorrect, because if you do that, then we have in the U.S., we have these things called lawyers and class action suits, right? And they thrive to sue companies for $87 million, where everybody will get like a coupon. All 9 million people in the class get a coupon for 10 cents off juice, and they get a fee of about $37 million from the lawsuit. So no one who's manufacturing a food product is going to make any type of claim, or make any claim that can be misconstrued or can be construed as being not factually correct. So what in the world is wrong with cranberry juice, which is 100% juice? It's simple. They didn't tell you what kind of juice is the 100% juice. They said, we're selling you cranberry juice, and what's in this bottle is 100% juice. Did anybody ever drink 100% cranberry juice? If you did, please stand up so we can all look at the big hole in your stomach from one end to the other. Because the acidity in cranberry juice is so high that if you would drink 100% cranberry juice, it's going to burn right through you. You want to clean yourself for Pesach? This is the way. This is the way you do it. It's very easy. So nobody's giving you 100% cranberry juice. It would kill you. It would seriously injure you. You know, it's like drinking acid. So then how can they say it's 100% juice? Well, you know, a cranberry juice, most of them, let's say 15% cranberry juice, maybe 17%. There's one brand that I know that they make on the kosher LePesach special is 23% actual cranberry juice. But the rest of it is a different kind of juice. Most of the time it will be either apple juice, or pear juice, or white grape juice. The reason they use white grape juice, apple or pear, is because it depends at any given moment which is the cheapest garbage low quality juice that they can pick up on the market. This goes true for just anybody who says, it's a filler juice. But on your label it says cranberry juice, 100% juice. Look on the back, cranberry juice plus other juices, parentheses, apple, pear, or white grape. A white grape obviously is most of the time not going to be a kosher juice, because kosher white grape juice is much more expensive and much more difficult to find than non-kosher. But a very simple example. Again, what could be wrong? Everything could be wrong. That excludes the possibility, even let's say no, we know. It's really, they tell us it is 100% apple juice. Says so on the label, says so on the back. Made from 100% apple juice. So now, what could be wrong over there? Let's understand that there are really three factors that go into creating a kosher product. Certainly on a commercial scale. Every time we look at a product to discern whether it's kosher or not, we have to take into account three different things. One is the raw materials, the ingredients that were used. The second is the equipment that it was made on. And the third thing is the process. How we made it. What they exactly did to it. So again, 100% apple juice only came from apples, made from Johnny Appleseed. Beautiful Canadian apples. Right? 100% fresh, squeezed by people. What could be wrong with that? It's true. If you look on the bottom, most of the time nowadays, a new development in the last couple of years is that on the bottom it will say pasteurized. Once you pasteurize anything, you're asking for trouble. Because pasteurization is a process where they take whatever it is and they cook it. They cook it to kill bacteria. It used to be you didn't have to cook juices, you didn't have to pasteurize them, because again, the acid content of the juice is high enough that it kills bacteria on its own. However, just about every juice that you're going to be buying any place, in any store, under any brand, at this moment is going to be pasteurized. So, in and of itself, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Until you find out, well, what did they pasteurize on this particular pasteurizer, on this heat exchanger? What did they pasteurize before that? Popular is grape. Grape is very, very popular. Another popular juice nowadays, I don't know if it's happening up here in the U.S., there is a, because the United States is a wonderfully open, welcoming country like Avraham Avinu, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, no longer has a border, at least to the south. So the Hispanic population of the United States has grown exponentially. Now, apparently Hispanic people love clam. Clam juice is a very, very popular item, and juice plants are producing clam juice. See, when you go and buy a juice from the apple juice people, so if you're buying from, well, I don't even know. I can't even give you a name. Huh? It won't matter. I'm thinking right now, I'm just thinking off the top of my head because he used apple. Apple's a bad example for me. You know, you buy orange juice, you're buying, let's say, a non-OU name over here, Tropicana. Tropicana's an orange juice company. They deal in oranges. That's really all they do. But when you get into the apple juices, most of these companies are not an apple juice company. They are a juice company. As such, they will produce juices, whatever kind of juice, across the spectrum. Now, I'll just give you a little insight into how a juice company works. Juice companies, as with other companies, do not like something called downtime. We'll talk about this a little bit later when we discuss exactly what you need to know in order to be able to give a competent, professional kosher supervision. But juice companies don't like downtime. They don't like their equipment to be sitting there doing nothing. And they don't like to spend time cleaning their equipment also, because when you clean it, that's an expensive proposition. Number one, you're not producing product, so you're losing money at that moment. Number two, the cost of the water to clean it, there's a cost involved with that too. Number three, if you have to heat that water and cook it up in order to get rid of bacteria, so then there's energy costs involved with that. Now you say, well, how much can that cost? How expensive can it be? Think about doing that. Let's say you make 19 different types of juices in one day, which is not an uncommon number. Maybe not 19, maybe 10, 12 for a juice company to produce in one day. So if you were going to clean and CIP, clean in place, heat treat your equipment between each and every product, you would never be able to produce 12 batches of juice a day. You'd probably be able to get through 3, maybe 4, and at that you wouldn't be in business too long, because the associated expenses of being down so long and the cost of the cleaning is not going to work. Therefore, in shocking horrors, Rabbi Stone reveals now the shocking truth. Rabbi Stone reveals the shocking truth in the juice industry. The shocking truth of juice processing is they don't clean the machines after every juice. Sorry. I know. In the back. Don't worry about it. It's shocking but true. The way a juice company produces is as follows. We start going from light to dark, and from it works with viscosity also, with thickness. So we start with light, non-thick juices, and as we go through the day, we make the next juice will be a little bit darker, maybe a little bit thicker, until we finally get to the darkest and the thickest juices. There's a very simple reason for that. See, because if I would start off and I would make grape juice in the morning, and then I would want to make apple juice, nobody's going to want my apple juice, because my apple juice is going to be purple, because it's going to have grape in it. Alright? But if I make grape juice, if I make apple juice first, which is a clear juice, and then I go to grape, even if there's some apple juice mixed into that grape, you're never going to see it. You won't taste it, you won't notice it, you won't see it. It will, for all intents and purposes for you, the consumer, have disappeared. Now, if I do it the first way, I have to go spend time and money washing out my machine, washing out my pasteurizer, cleaning everything up in order to go from dark to light. But if I start with the apple and then I go to the grape, no problem. Then I don't have to clean anything. Because if there's a little bit of apple mixed into my grape, it's not a big deal. So you say, well, Rabbi, then we have no problem, because, hey, they'll always do the grape at the end, right? And then to make the lighter juices that are the kosher ones, then they have to clean out. So what do we need you for? A good question. My family has asked me many times, Rabbi, what do we need you for? The answer is, because just like there's red grape, there is white grape. And if I start my day with apple, I could start it with white grape and just build on to that, on and on and on. Every one of those juices is heated. Every one of those juices is cooked to a temperature somewhere approximating anywhere between 182 and 201 degrees Fahrenheit. In Celsius, I don't know, because Celsius are not real numbers. Fahrenheit is real. Celsius is some invention someplace. Right? But anywhere between 182 and 201 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, according to everybody, that's cooking. Once you'll cook a non-kosher juice in a pasteurizer to make it, it's not kosher. Next thing that goes through, everything that goes through that pasteurizer before you kosher it, everything coming out is not kosher. So you have no idea. You look at this juice bottle, what could be wrong with it? It could have non-kosher juice. And if it doesn't, it could have been made right after they made on the same day without the cleaning. It could actually be not kosher, because you have no idea looking at the label what went on there. I want to address another part of ingredients that perhaps we can learn something from. There is, as with everything in life, and this is bordering on a philosophical statement, which philosophy is Rabbi Bendelstein's forte. I am more interested in a good bag of potato chips as opposed to some type of good theory. I don't want to step on his area of expertise. But as with all things in life, you know, there's good and there's bad. And the Silas Yisharim teaches us that everything in the world can be used for a positive. All things in life. All things in life all situations in life present challenges for us, which if we use them, we can overcome them and grow from them. Or if we don't meet those challenges or don't work at them, we can wind up not moving forward, perhaps the opposite. So too in the world of food and ingredients. Now, there is such a thing as what are known as natural and artificial flavors. If you look on, oh, look, here's a bottle of Diet Coke. I will read the ingredient panel to you. I can read either the English side or the French side. There you go. I will choose to read the French. Carbonated water, the caramel, colour, phosphoric and citric acid, aspartame, flavors. Okay, look, there's flavors in here. There's flavors in everything. Just about anything that you buy. Why, look, here's Entenmann's Little Bites. Let's see. Don't tell me I'm lost here. Sugar, bleached white flour, non-fat milk, chocolate chips, soy lecithin, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, high fructose corn syrup, modified food starch, water, artificial flavors. Okay, we have flavors in this. Let's pick up, what do you think? I'm just picking up things at random over here. There we go. In the organic Go-Go grams. Organic unbleached wheat flour, organic dehydrated cane juice, organic expeller pressed high oleic safflower oil, organic whole wheat flour, organic honey, organic molasses, leavening, ginger, sea salt, natural lemon flavor. Okay, we can do this. How many more? I could pick up. If you want, bring me like 100 things, and I will show you that in each and every one of them they have something called flavors. Flavors are a wonderful thing. Flavors are absolutely the best thing in the whole world, almost, except for except for chocolate bars, which are better. Flavors are a reflection of the world and the society and the culture in which we live. Because if you are a flavor, you can be something that you're not. You know? That's what it's all about today, is to be able to be something that you aren't, call yourself that, and everybody will think that you are. Just because you pretend that you are that. That's what flavors are. We have such things as natural and artificial flavors. A flavor, I don't think I need to define that word for everyone. Flavor is a taste. A flavor is something which imparts the taste of something into something else. So we have those which are natural and artificial. Natural and artificial. Now, an artificial flavor is, for example, let's say I have an artificial maple flavor. In an artificial maple flavor, there will not be anything from the maple tree. There will not be anything from the maple syrup. There will not be anything from the maple sap. In artificial maple syrup, you're going to have some aldehydes, you're going to have some benzenes, you're going to have some alcohols, you're going to have all sorts of good stuff, all coming together to do one thing and one thing only. To taste like maple syrup. That's the purpose. There is nothing maple in there. Now, let me give you a piece of advice. Rabbi Bendelstein was talking about the secret of living forever. My personal theory is that you should eat only foods with preservatives. because my mother taught me you are what you eat. So if you eat all these preservatives, you will stay around for... You're not going anywhere. So try some of these flavors. Some of these flavors, you want to be an artificial person, then just use these. Because you're going to get a beautiful maple taste from this. And there's nothing maple about it. It's all these good chemicals that God has given us flavor chemists to discover in order to impart this taste. That's what an artificial flavor is. On the other hand, we have something called natural flavors. Natural flavors. Natural flavors aren't natural flavors. It's the natural flavor. Right? What could be more explicit than that? The following scenario occurs. And this is why you have to think. We could think, you know, oh, if I only lived 3,000 years ago when the Torah was given, now is when you want to be living. I'll tell you why. Because now we can have the following scenario, which 3,000 years ago maybe no one ever dreamed of. Go into your store, your local Sobeys. Is that a store, by the way? Sobeys. Okay, that's a big store. You can go into your store and you can buy the following. Oh, let me think. What was my example? I have to get it. I have it. You can buy the following. You can buy... I'm sorry. It slipped my mind, but it's such a wonderful thing. You know, the best things in life, you always forget. Yes. You can go into the store and you can purchase the following two items. You can go and purchase a product certified, OU certified, Kelowna brand natural meat flavored spaghetti sauce. At the same time that you purchase that, you can purchase OU certified New London brand natural cheese flavored crackers. Ready for this? Both of those are certified on the label OU Parv. So you can now take your natural spaghetti sauce, meat flavored spaghetti sauce, spread it on your natural cheddar cheese flavored Nova Toast, and have a meat cheese feast. It's a wonderful life, isn't it? See, that's what we're alive today. It's a wonderful thing. Now, Rabbi Bendelstein, because you're the rabbi, I'm just the dumb mashgiach, right? But you're like the smart rabbi from the office, so he could explain this to us. But you explain to me, Rabbi Bendelstein, A, how I can have a natural meat-flavored item that's parv, how can I have a natural cheese-flavored item that's parv, and how I can put natural meat and natural cheese together and be able to eat something that the OU would serve at their annual Hanukkah holiday season party, which we don't have, but if you all write to Rabbi Ganak, my boss, and ask him for it, maybe we could get that done. I'll answer it for you. Thank you. Because if we ask you, we'll get some type of philosophical explanation that will tell us what was going on 4,000 years ago. I'm going to tell you what it's all about. Natural meat, the last time I looked, folks, is meat. Right? Moo, cow, right? Natural cheese, last time I looked, is cheese. So how can you put the two together? Very simple answer. Nobody ever said that there's any meat in natural meat flavor, and no one ever said there's any cheese in natural cheese flavor. All we said was, we have a flavor that tastes like meat that is all natural. We have a flavor that tastes like cheese, which is all natural. Natural means that there are no artificial materials that went into creating that flavor. If I can take the tailbones of deceased carp and turn that into a flavor that tastes like meat, I have natural meat flavor. Because fish are natural. And the flavor tastes like meat. That is a natural meat flavor. The same way, I could take any natural materials, as long as they're not artificial, As long as it's all sourced from natural items, and I create a cheese flavor, something that tastes like cheddar cheese, I now have a natural cheese flavor. So now, there are these people out there called flavor chemists. They are, if they were running our national defenses, no one would be able to attack us or anything, because they are the most creative people. They can think of any possible scenario that there is. So they have developed ways to get that meat flavor from all natural items, probably anywhere between 10 to 130 different ingredients that go into this flavor that are all natural, that taste exactly like meat, but has no meat in it. It's all fire. And the same way with the cheese. So it's a beautiful world. Now we can have our natural meat-flavored spaghetti sauce, our natural cheese cracker, put them all together, and we are doing absolutely nothing wrong, Rabbi. The OU blesses you. That's a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, there is a flip side to it. The flip side is, just like a natural meat flavor does not have to have any meat in it to be called a natural meat flavor, or a natural cheese flavor does not have to have any cheese in it to be called a natural cheese flavor, a natural hazelnut flavor doesn't need hazelnuts to be called a natural hazelnut flavor either. As long as everything that goes into it is natural, it's a natural hazelnut flavor. So when we buy our bag of coffee, hazelnut flavored coffee, if you look, you'll see it says ingredients. Coffee, we hope. Coffee, natural hazelnut flavor. So I should be able to buy that without hashgacha, because what could be wrong with hazelnuts, right? No. Because in my natural hazelnut flavor, there may not be any hazelnuts, but as long as there's something that's natural, even if it's from a meat-derived source, it can go in there, and it's a natural hazelnut flavor. So if I have an emulsifier, I have a polysorbate, I have a monoordiglyceride, fancy terms, I know the big words, right? If I have any of these things that come from an animal-based oil, which is where all these things come from, by the way. Right? They're all split off from the end of the carboxyl. You have three fatty acids and one glycerol molecule. So from the fatty acids, we take those. From the glycerols, we get the monoundiglycerides. And from the fatty acids, we get the stearates and the oleates and the laurates, sorbitan tristearate. If anybody's picked up some over at Sobeys, they have a special this week. But that's what he said. But all these fancy names come off of fats. Some fats are vegetable, some fats are animal. If you would use a sorbitan tristearate, which comes from the fatty acid, if it's going to be, let's say, a caprylic acid from a C18 or a C20 capric caprylic acid, C18, C20s are generally non-kosher animals. They're from animals. So if that's where they got that, but they put it into your flavor, your natural hazelnut flavor is treif. It used to moo. Just for those that don't understand it. So now, you look at it, what could be wrong? Natural hazelnut flavor. See, so you are best off buying artificial flavors, right? Because then you know it can't be treif because it's all artificial. Except for the fact that why do we label things natural and artificial? Well, natural because we're very proud of them. But artificial flavors we'll label because we don't want to get sued. Because there are all these crackpots out there, pardon me, there are probably some in our audience today, the organic, vegan, vegetarian, natural people, right? Then it's not a bad thing. I just make jokes. But natural foods people, who if you put natural on something and they find out that even one itsy-bintsy, teensy-wincy little piece of it was not natural, then come into class action lawsuits and they make money and they become rich. So therefore, smart food producers say, instead of calling my natural flavor natural, I'll just call it artificial. And if I call it artificial, then you can't sue me. So we say natural and artificial flavor. So you would say, well, if it's artificial flavor, then I'm safe. Can't be treif because it's all artificial, and artificial is not treif because it never moved. Not true. Because I can take a natural flavor, and in order to protect myself, call it artificial. If I call it artificial, I'm safe, even though it's treif. I'm safe, it's treif. Works out well. So you can't rely on flavors either. Okay, what's Rabbi Stone going to keep us from being able to eat in the future also? Let me give you one more. Let me give you one more very popular example. Let's talk about the non-dairy creamers, which is a source of upsetness to many people here. I'm sure that they think that those people, that the OU rabbis, that we went to dummy school because our non-dairy creamers are labeled OUD. Well, stupid, right? If it's non-dairy, what's the D doing there for, right? Okay, duh. Duh. Okay, we have gotten beyond that, please. Non-dairy creamers. The reason most non-dairy creamers are OUD, nick-labeled dairy, is because they contain something called sodium caseinate. Sodium or calcium caseinate. Caseinates are actually a milk protein. Casein is a milk protein. It's insoluble in the human body. It does not break down. Therefore, we take the casein, which is the milk protein. It's kind of like a cheese process where we separate off the milk protein, the casein. Then we take a hydrochloric acid and we act it with the casein and we create something called a caseinate, which the human body can break down. We take that sodium caseinate and we put it into something called non-dairy creamer. The reason we say that it's OUD is because the stuff has milk in it, which I think is a very valid reason for calling it D. Now you may say, okay, then if it has milk in it, why is it non-dairy? I am not a politician, quite clearly. But this is really a political type of thing. There's something called the non-dairy creamer lobby that says people don't want dairy creamers. They want non-dairy creamers. So they went to at least the U.S. government and they said to them, listen, we have these creamers. They have caseinates in them. Caseinates are milk. But people don't want dairy creamers. If they want dairy creamers, they would buy cream. But they don't want that. They want non-dairy creamers. So what we propose is the following. We give you a lot of money, and you let us put non-dairy on our milk creamers. Surprisingly, this worked. It's really just the creamer lobby. There's really no other explanation for it. I don't think there's any better explanation for it. Non-dairy creamers, if they are marked D, do not eat them with meat. Do not put them into your roast beef. That would be very, very bad. All right? They are dairy. They do have milk. That's why we put the D. No, it's not just dairy equipment. Whoever has the dairy equipment before, no, this is not just dairy equipment. You look on the side, caseinate, dairy, milk. It is real dairy. The only reason they call them non-dairy is because they wouldn't be able to sell them if they call them dairy. So they lobbied and allowed themselves this exception to the law that they can label them non-dairy. There are some non-dairy creamers which are actually part. Right? They do not have caseinates in them. My particular suggestion is that if you take a creamer and it says par, before you use it, check the ingredient panel and see whether it says anything that sounds like casein. Because oftentimes, these guys say non-dairy, they can put a parve on it. It has happened and it does happen. But it will be reflected in the ingredient panel. A lot of times what happens, and this is really fun, is they have these things manufactured by, they'll go and do a special run and do actual parve, non-caseinate containing non-dairy creamers. But they'll use the old ingredient panel from the dairy ones. So they'll say parve on it, and then you look on the side, it says caseinate. That's because they were cheap and they didn't want to redo the ingredient panel and then have to pay those expenses. But if you call them up, you can watch them sweat for a while. The company, because it's supposed to be non-dairy, and yet it does have caseinate. There are many more examples. I would love to share them with you. Fortunately, we have lunch, I believe. I'm not in charge of this program, but lunch is next.
Real cheese.
Real cheese. Real Chav Yisrael. We didn't even talk about Chav Yisrael. Hey, but there is much more to come. Rabbi Bendelstein has, I have heard this before, Rabbi Speck has some compelling bakery facts that you may not want to eat, that you'll love bakery after you hear him, and hopefully we have much more to share with you. Thank you very much.